Welcome to GWEEK episode 55, recorded Tuesday, June 5th, 2012. I'm Mark Fraunfelder. GWEEK is where the editors and friends of Boing Boing talk about comic books, science fiction and fantasy, video games, TV shows, music, movies, tools, gadgets, apps, and other neat stuff. Joining me today are Ruben Bowling, the author of the weekly comic strip Tom the Dancing Bug, which premieres each week on Boing Boing, and Michael Pusateri, a lifelong tinkerer and former television tech executive for Disney, who blogs at Kruftbox.com. And Rainn Wilson, the actor and comedian best known for his role as Dwight Schrute in the hit series The Office. He's also the founder of a very cool website and YouTube channel called Soul Pancake, which is devoted to discussing life's big questions in art, philosophy, creativity, and spirituality. Hey, Rainn, how's it going?
It's going great. How are you?
Oh, doing just fine. Just having a fine time here on a sunny Los Angeles day. So great time to do a podcast.
Yeah, good. It's sunny outside. All of Los Angeles is gallivanting, and here we are talking on our headsets.
Exactly. So these are heavy subjects, Rainn. What gave you the idea to create Soul Pancake?
Well, I've been an actor for a long, long time and kind of got successful late in my life and saw this opportunity as I started getting well known for doing Dwight to do something really cool on the web. And I'd always wanted to do that. And so I just tried to figure out what that would be. I mean, when we were first talking about getting something started, this was like 5 or 6 years ago, and there was a lot less cool. There was no Boing Boing on the web back then. It was a lot less cool back then. And so we kind of narrowed it down. And one thing that I really realized is that something that I was very interested in as a young person, there wasn't really a place to go to experience that. And that was, I was really interested in what makes us human beings, the life's big questions, the giant questions of philosophy, of creativity, of spirituality. What makes us human beings? What do we struggle with? What are these universal questions that we deal with? I was also very interested in the arts and creativity and what makes artists tick and what is that impulse to create? And so that's kind of the genesis of Soul Pancake. I started it with my good friends Joshua Homnick and Devin Gundry, and Devin still runs it with me. And we're a lot of things now. We're really a media company. We have a website, of course, soulpancake.com, and now this YouTube channel that's going to be launching next month. And we've been doing these shorts for Oprah Winfrey Network, and it looks like we're going to be doing a pilot for them. We had a New York Times best-selling book, and we want to uplift people and challenge people and just tackle just this little old silly thing of tackling what it means to be a human being.
So, I took a look at some of the topics that are discussed on Soul Pancake, and here's just a sample of them. One is the secret to happiness is ... Another one is ethnic pride a good idea? Another one is, can we escape the huge sins of our fathers? And that was in reference to a BBC documentary about Adolf Hitler's descendants. And then another one, survey that shows more Americans believe Obama is Muslim than in the theory of evolution. Those are like, to me, those would be like, those would turn into flame wars pretty quickly if we were to have those on Boing Boing. How do you go about moderating discussions like that?
Well, we really don't do moderating. You know, there's definitely some trolls on Soul Pancake and some jerkwads, and I get into it occasionally with them. But it's a very civil place. I mean, there's a lot of people with a lot of different opinions. It's the only place on the web where we literally have born-again Christians. We have atheists, agnostic, Buddhists, everything in between. And all discussing these big ideas in a very civil way. And that's really what the site is all about. I mean, we have features that help with that. You can block people and flag people and friend people and stuff like that. But it really is, it's pretty civil.
Congratulations. That's pretty amazing. I think, you know, when Boing Boing started out, we we were able to have conversations that were unmoderated. But once you reach kind of a critical mass, you start to get these kind of extreme people who are six standard deviations away from the center of the bell curve. And, you know, one drop of bile can wreck the whole swimming pool. So we have a couple of full-time moderators now who do a really good job of moderating the site and the discussions. I kind of think of it as like strong psychoactive medicine, like Prozac or something. Mm-hmm. There's some downsides to it, but it really does keep the conversation civil. Mm-hmm. But that's mm-hmm. great that I guess people are coming onto Soul Pancake with good intentions, and I hope that it stays that way, because I've been reading the discussions and they're really good.
Yeah. It has been, like I say, I mean, I keep saying the word civil. It's been, people are respectful. I think the toughest discussion on there is about God, because what I've found is that the atheists kind of, and many of my friends are atheists. I feel like that's what you say. Like, many of my best friends are black. Many of my best friends are atheists. But atheists really, they kind of, for the most part, I'm going to piss off a lot of atheists. They live for one thing, to live in opposition of the idea that there is a God. That is their reason for their belief system. Mm-hmm. There's very rare that you'll find an atheist putting forward a very positive, life-affirming, life-embracing, forward-moving thought process. It's mostly to say, hey, if you believe in God, you're an idiot. So mostly what we get on Soul Pancake are the angry atheists that if someone brings up, like, do you think that I should pray to God for blah, 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 and whatever someone is expressing, because we have this question collective where anyone can write any of life's big questions or struggles that they're dealing with personally. It's kind of like a Yahoo Answers for the soul. Mm-hmm. And but we definitely get the atheists saying, like, you're an idiot. You believe in God. Oh, you believe in the flying spaghetti monster. So that's definitely that's the biggest hot button topic.
Sure. So I remember reading somewhere that you are of the Baha'i faith.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I know a little bit about it because my wife's great-great uncle was a fellow named Horace Hotchkiss Hawley, who was
He was a famous early American Baha'i.
Yeah. And yeah. So we have some of his books, and really interesting. And Baha'i seems to be a kind of faith that promotes the kind of questions and spiritual discussions that Soul Pancake trades in. Would you?
Yes,
agree?
Absolutely. The one of the principal teachings of the Baha'i faith is called individual investigation of truth. And this is a pillar of what it is to be a Baha'i, is to investigate the truth for yourself. Baha'is believe in science. Baha'is believe that science and religion can and must agree, that God is contained in science and the miracles of science, and that we live in a life of search and a life of asking questions and not taking anything at face value and not believing, not just accepting the belief systems of our parents, but also not just accepting the belief systems of the world at large. And I think that's what a lot of people do today. They don't necessarily inherit their parents' beliefs, but they definitely inherit, the belief system of their friends and their peers at college or on the web or at the Huffington Post or whatever like that. So it very much is inspired by my faith in that this is an open forum for people to question the universe.
Yeah, that's really cool. You know, I was just thinking when in 2003, my family lived on a little island in the South Pacific called Rarotonga, and we became friends with some Baha'i there, and we would have really great dinner conversations, and it reminded me kind of like a real time face to face Soul Pancake, because they love to have those kinds of discussions.
Yeah.
It's really
cool.
Interesting. Yeah. So the name Soul Pancake reminds me a little bit of an early, like early 60s Allen Ginsberg poetry collection called Reality Sandwiches.
I haven't heard that one before.
Oh, that's yeah. Great. Yeah. It's a little book, and it just reminded me. I was going to ask you if it's an inspiration, but if you haven't heard of it, then it's not, but pretty
no,
cool.
No, I don't know that one.
So let's talk a little bit about the YouTube channel. You kind of,
but I wish I would have thought of that. Reality Sandwich is a way better web domain name than Soul Pancake.
But you know, actually, I remember now that a friend of mine helped launch a website called Reality Sandwich, based on Allen Ginsberg's book, and I think it explores some similar topics as Soul Pancake. You guys should hook up.
We should hook up. Do websites hook up in that way?
I don't know. Make some interesting babies for sure.
Yeah.
So you launched, I guess you relaunched kind of your YouTube channel, youtube.com/soulpancake. And,
yes, it's actually launching. I don't know when this podcast is going to be. It's going to be launching around the end of July.
Oh, okay.
Of 2012. We're in the process right now of shooting a bunch of original content for our channel. But basically, our channel is just an extension of what we do on our website. YouTube is doing, / Google is doing this very brave, adventurous, and cool thing where they're giving all these production companies and entities money to produce content under their channels to kind of create like mini TV networks. It's like YouTube is then like the DirecTV, and all these channels are underneath it. And, you know, Nerdist has a channel, and, you know, Amy Poehler has a channel, and Shaquille O'Neal has a channel, and there's a all Kardashian channel. And it's on all different topics. It's sports and fashion and entertainment, but ours is under science, education, and the arts. And we're there with TED Talks and MoCA, Museum of Contemporary Art, and a few other ones.
Oh, that's good company.
Yeah.
I love that heart attack video that you have up currently.
Oh, yeah.
Tell me about that one.
That's one of the short pieces we did for the Oprah Winfrey Network. We were doing these short content for them. We ended up making 30-some videos for them and contributed to the death of that network. What we tried to do is just explore life's big questions on the street, just kind of uplift and challenge and excite people with on-the-street challenges. And that one was people on Venice Beach were walking down the beach, and they saw a giant box and a giant button. And you'd push the button, and then the box would open and fog and lights would come out, and all of these dancers dressed in heart costumes would come out and start dancing around and hug you. It sounds like a kind of a nightmare or an alien invasion, but it was actually really fun, like people's reactions, just to see this kind of surrealist joy on the boardwalk of Venice Beach and being surrounded by hugging hearts and with great music. And we were very pleased with that one.
Yeah, that was fun. It reminds me a bit of the Improv Everywhere videos.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, they're great. They're fantastic. Yeah.
Really cool. Yeah. So Michael, you had a question for Rain, I know.
Well, on the topic of personal improvement, last year you participated in the Malibu Triathlon. I was there too, and I was wondering, are you planning to do more? How does exercise fit into kind of your improving yourself?
Wow, that's a nice question. I did not do the triathlon. I did the running leg of the triathlon. I want to be very clear. I ran 5 miles for that triathlon. That's the longest I've ever run in my life. And I am not but I like to play tennis, and you know, I work out a little bit here and there when I can. And I've neglected my body all through my youth. And now in my 40s, I'm finding that I have to kind of exercise to keep going and keep my energy up and my health up. So I'm kind of been forced into it, but and my weight down. So, but it's been fun. But yeah, our body is our temple, you know.
Well, you feel me? Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's get you on a bike and get you out there to do the bike leg. That's,
you know,
the funnest
I would
part.
Do the bike, but the swimming scares the shit out of me. I don't know, like, you know, 1,000 people plunging in the ocean and you swim way out, and I'm not that strong of an ocean swimmer like that. It kind of scares me. I'm afraid I'd get kicked in the head and pass out and drown in a kelp forest.
Yeah, that's definitely that seems like that would be the toughest part of a triathlon, is the swim part.
Yeah, definitely.
So when we let's move on to talking about some of the cool media that we've been reading and listening to and looking at lately. We'll start with books and comics. And Ruben, you want to talk about the newest Carl Barks collection, Uncle Scrooge, Only a Poor Man, which it's so cool. I got it too, but talk about it.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you got it. Yeah, this is the second of a series of reprints of these Carl Barks comic books that came out, I guess, in the 40s and 50s mostly. And I think these both have been in the 50s. And there's going to be a complete Carl Barks library when they're done. Fantagraphics is making them. And these reprints are, I think, the best comic books ever. The content is great. Carl Barks is the master. He did these Disney comics that were just amazing. But the publishing is just so cool. The paper, the colors, the concept, the supplementary material, everything about it is just perfectly done. And it's great. I think these are the greatest comics, and so everyone would like them. But kids would just love these. And so I think it's a great thing to get for kids. There's just a 100% chance of success getting it for kids. These are tremendous books.
Yeah, and it kind of disproves Jerry Seinfeld's saying that there's no such thing as fun for the whole family, because I think that Uncle Scrooge, Carl Barks' Uncle Scrooge, can be enjoyed by kids and parents at the same time.
Well, I think it depends on the family, right? Mark, I think you and I have a sensibility. I'm sure Michael and Rain as well. But I know for sure that you and I do have a sensibility. We enjoy kids' culture.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I most things for me are fun for the whole family, or they're not fun at all. So, yeah, I would definitely dispute that.
Yeah.
What is Jerry Seinfeld doing that he can't have fun with the whole family?
Well, what he's talking about is if you go somewhere and you see a sign on a roadside attraction or something that says fun for the whole family, it's true. It never is.
I guess roadside attractions. I may agree with that.
and so all your next book is, R.A. Dickey's, book, I guess, memoirs or something like that.
Yeah. I keep bringing him up. He's this, Mets pitcher. And I've talked about him here on Gweek because he's such an unusual guy. He's a pitcher up for the Mets, but he's also a Star Wars and Lord of the Rings freak. He was born without a UCL, which is a ligament in your elbow. And other pitchers, if they get a tweak in it, they get surgery and they're out for a year and a half. And he has none at all. And he's a knuckleball pitcher, which is a very unusual pitch in baseball. He's the only current knuckleball pitcher that there is. And it's very, and this book is sort of about the knuckleball as a metaphor, where he's life changed and his career changed when he began throwing the knuckleball and understanding it almost in a Zen way, that you knuckleball is the only pitch where you put no spin on it at all. You release the ball and the ball has no spin. And then whatever happens to it, by natural air currents, is what confuses the hitter. When it's done right, it's unhittable. The metaphor of the book is that he had to learn to let go of himself, to let life's forces take him where it will in order to succeed in life and in throwing the knuckleball. So it's a real nice book. One of the things that I was struck by is that, you know, I think we all have this like narrative in our lives where so many people do this, where you feel like you're right and everyone else is wrong. Like whenever someone tells an anecdote, it's like, I was in this meeting and everyone was saying this, And I said that, and then sure enough, I was right, and everyone else is a jerk. And I guess only 50% of us are actually right in creating this narrative, but we almost all have it. And he is just the opposite. I mean, he revels in telling stories about how he thought one thing and he was totally wrong. And a friend or his wife or a coach or a teammate helped him and showed him how he was wrong. And he just loves telling stories about how he was wrong about something. And I thought that was really unusual and really cool. And it sort of contrasted with the other memoir I happened to read, Michael Ian Black's, he was a comedian, You're Not Doing It Right. Rain is probably a friend of yours. Probably you probably see each other at the celebrity weekly meetings.
We hang out with all the celebrities. Me, Michael Ian Black, and Clooney, and Jolie, and just we all get together and we just talk about how amazing we are.
We count
our money together. It's really fun. You guys, no, you can't come because you're not.
No,
one knows who
not.
You are. So
I wouldn't want to go.
But come on.
That is
so much fun.
They laugh at the Uncle Scrooge book.
But Michael is, and I liked the book. I thought it was really interesting, but he's sort of the opposite. I mean, the name of the book is You're Not Doing It Right. It's what people tell him. It's not, name of the book is not I'm Not Doing It Right. It's a very intensely personal book, very confessional. About this, he was, you know, scared of getting married, scared of having kids. And then the moral of the story is not look how great everything turned out. It is, he's intensely ambivalent about both, you know, throughout his life, which is a very, it's a very different guy from me, but I could really relate to his feelings because he's a really compelling writer. It's not a funny, hilarious book from a comedian. It's a very sort of serious and heart-searching book written by a humorist. So it is funny, but you know, not a comedy routine. So I thought that was really that was interesting. And I almost never read memoirs, so I was surprised to see when I was looking at what to talk about that I ended up having just read two of these memoirs.
Cool. That the Michael Ian Black one sounds good, and I ordered it on Audible, so it's downloading. Or it's probably done downloading by now. Rain, you had a couple of similar books written by comedians and television writers that you wanted to talk about. Bossy Pants and Is Everyone Hanging Out Without Me?
Yeah, I don't really read comedic memoirs. I loved Steve Martin's. That was years ago, you know, that one. That one is a brilliant, if you're looking for a great kind of comedic memoir. And it's kind of got a sadness tinged through it. It's really interesting. Just tells the whole story of his life.
Is that Born Standing Up?
Yes. Yeah.
That's great.
Another one I have waiting to listen to on Audible.
Yeah. It's fantastic.
That is a great one.
But so I was just, I don't know. I mean, I know Tina and Mindy and Michael Ian Black and me, we all hang out at our celebrity get togethers. And I just wanted to read their books. And I enjoyed them a lot. I don't know what to say. I mean, they're two of the smartest, funniest women going, and the books are great. Tina Fey's kind of talking about her time at Saturday Night Live and coming up through Second City was really fascinating. And Mindy, you know, what can I say? I just adore Mindy Kaling, and she's got a huge heart and a big laugh, and she's a cool person, and her book just really reflects her spirit. She's very positive and fun, and it just comes naturally to her, and it just is reflected through the memoir. And it's and don't get me wrong, it's got just wickedly funny and dark and weird messed up stuff in it, but her heart really shines through.
Oh, that sounds great. And that Bossy Pants cover still freaks me out every time I see it.
Yeah. No, it's weird.
It's so good. And then another book you wanted to recommend is a great one that I loved, A Short History of Nearly Everything by Bill Bryson, a wonderful writer.
Yeah, Bill Bryson is really amazing. I just read his book on Shakespeare as well. But I am actually about halfway through A Short History of Nearly Everything, and this is what I do. I got the audio book, and it's read by some English chappie, and I listen to it when I go jogging, and then I feel like I'm getting like maximum like benefit to my body because I'm getting the history of everything downloaded. It's like the Matrix, you know, when they download Kung Fu or How to Drive a Helicopter into your brain stem. Then I'm getting a short history of everything into my brain, and I'm jogging and getting my heart healthy at the same time.
That's cool. My favorite book by him is one that I don't think was that big of a seller, but I think it was called The Adventures of the Thunderbolt Kid.
I haven't even heard of that one.
Oh, man, it's so good. It's about his upbringing. It's called The Life and Times of the Thunderbolt Kid, and it's about his upbringing in the 50s and 60s in Des Moines, Iowa, and what life was like there. And, man, it is so good the way he describes childhood in those times. And
So it's a personal memoir.
Exactly. Yeah. It's fantastic.
Great.
And then you had one other one, The Seven Mysteries of Life by Guy Murchie.
Yeah, this one, I truly believe that Bill Bryson was influenced by Guy Murchie. Guy Murchie is kind of the first guy, I don't want to say the first guy, because there were a lot of Jesuits that kind of were doing this kind of thing, which is exploring life's big questions through a kind of transcendental scientific lens. And it's very thick, heady stuff, but he takes you through how, you know, kind of like a brief history of nearly everything. He takes you through all life on the planet. And then he starts to go into the mystical, metaphysical implications of science. And it's, I forget when it came out. It was the late 60s or early 70s. And, it was read. Oh man, I used to know this. A number of people read it and talked about it and were greatly influenced. Carl Sagan was. Carl Sagan loved it.
Oh, cool.
And it was a big influence on him. And it was before it predated Cosmos. And it's kind of that way of looking at the world. It's very thick. But if you like science writing and metaphysical, transcendental writing, then this is right up your alley.
Great. I just found a copy for 1 cent on Amazon and I bought it.
Boom, done.
Great. So I just have one book this time, and it's a really short novel called I Should Have Stayed Home by Horace McCoy. And he was kind of a bitter, bleak, hard-boiled depression era novelist. And his most well-known novel was one called They Shoot Horses, Don't They? And that was made into a movie in 1969 that Sidney Pollack directed, and it starred Michael Sarrazin and Jane Fonda. They Shoot Horses, Don't They? Was about this multi-week marathon dance contest and all the kinds of sad cases who had entered the contest to try to win a prize of $1,500. And it's just dragging on weeks and weeks, and Red Buttons does a great job in it as a sailor. It's a fantastic movie. But I Should Have Stayed Home is this, it's a novel about young people who have come from the Midwest and the South and have come to Hollywood to become actors, and they're working as extras. And so the main guy is this guy named Ralph Karsten. He's like an extraordinarily handsome guy with matinee movie idol good looks, but his Southern accent is so strong that he can't get work as being anything other than an extra. So he and another woman who's an actor live in this little bungalow on Vine Street in abject poverty. But then he eventually gets a taste in the good life when this rich middle-aged widow takes a special interest in him. But of course, it doesn't end well for Ralph or any of the other characters in the book. And it kind of reminded me of Nathaniel West's novel, Day of the Locust. It's basically about hayseeds getting their dreams dashed in Hollywood. And the other thing about the novel was that it was rumored to have been an influence for the movie Sunset Boulevard. And I could see that with the rich widow kind of taking in this poor, guy who was much younger than her. Anyway, you can get it as a Kindle book on Amazon for 99 cents. It's so great that all these pulp novels that used to be hard to get and cost $15 or $20 on Abe Books are now going for 99 cents on Amazon when people are picking up the rights to them and making them available again. I really am happy about that. So, moving on to entertainment, Michael, you had a pick for music, Gangstar Grass.
Bluegrass
plus rap. And they have a new album called Rapalachia.
Yeah, so the guy behind Gangstar Grass is a guy named Wrench, and I've been listening to him for a very long time since he had his original band, which was called Battlestar America. And it's the same style today of basically mixing, you know, bluegrass music with fiddles and that special guitar sound with rap music and mixing and scratching. And it's really interesting stuff. You're not hearing it anyplace else. They got a little fame. They've been the opening music for the TV show Justified for the last several years. Cool. So if you've seen the opening of that show, you've heard the music. So they have a new album that has just come out where a lot of different rappers on it. So if you're up for something new, it's definitely not what you're going to hear on the radio, but definitely somebody doing something new with music.
That sounds good. And Ruben, your pick is from a band that I can pronounce, Fountains of Wayne. And the album is Sky Full of Holes.
Just a store in New Jersey. Yeah, wow, that sounds so cool, Michael. That is definitely do they rap about what are their songs about? Is it like typical gangsta stuff? It's hard to even imagine.
No, there's a little bit of that, but it's a lot of kind of down on your luck, almost country and blues, but right. Also there's a lot of stuff that's kind of social conscience. Some of their early stuff was about recession and the rich getting richer and the poor getting poorer. So that kind of, if you're into that social justice and hearing more about that kind of thing, a lot of their songs deal with, you know, people struggling in life.
Cool. Yeah. Well, I just wanted to, mention, Fountains of Wayne. I love this band. I heard Stacy's mom listen to it like 50 times. I think it was actually counted on iTunes, so that is not an exaggeration. Before I decided to find out if those guys did anything else, and it's just a great band. They're so all the songs are so many of their songs are great and just as good as that. Just really catchy pop tunes, very melodic, great harmonies, but they tell really cool stories that are really genuinely funny and interesting. So I find it, you know, it's rare to find, you know, this kind of pop music with lyrics that are so smart and interesting. And also have a great sense of humor. That's what I've been listening to recently. The album came out about a year ago, so I'm late to that particular party, but I've been getting into them and their whole catalog, over the past couple of years.
Cool. That's a good pick. Thanks, Ruben. And so, Rain, you have a few. Kathleen Edwards is one of the musicians you recommended.
Yeah, I love Kathleen Edwards, and she's from Canada. But don't hold that against her. She's a great kind of alt country songstress. A lot of heartache, but really smart lyrics. And plus, she's now dating Bon Iver. So there's a little bit of that Bon Iver kind of atmosphere that's seeped. I think he played in a bunch of and helped produce a bunch of her songs. But she's great. She's got a very evocative voice and a good, you know, tough edge to her as well.
That's great. Yeah, I listened to a little of her music on her website when I got the list of your picks, and it's really nice stuff, as is Rhett Miller's music.
Yeah, Rhett I've gotten to know in my celebrity friendships. Actually, I have a guitar that's signed by two people, Slash and Rhett Miller.
Oh.
He's the founder of the Old 97s, great Texas rockabilly, alt-country band, and he does solo work every once in a while. He releases a solo album. His solo stuff is much sweeter and poppier, and this one kind of mixes the two. It's kind of Americana, but it's got some sweetness to it, and he's got a great voice and really terrific melodies, and he's a nice guy, and he signed my guitar, so check it out.
Very cool. And how about The Head and the Heart?
Yeah, this is, I'm just, I, you know, I had just written down a bunch of stuff I was listening to. I seem to be in this kind of like alt country-ish kind of mode right now, even though alt country is a phrase that was tossed around way too much about 8 years ago. but it's they're from Seattle, and they're kind of discovered playing in a coffee shop, and it's very evocative, spare, beautiful melodies, and I just love them, head and the heart.
That sounds good. And then you have a band that I think plays primarily children's music, but they're great, Casper Baby Pants.
You know, I was going to interject when you guys were talking about the whole Seinfeld quote about the nothing is fun for the whole family. Casper Baby Pants is fun for the whole family. It's kids music. Especially for kids between, you know, 3 and 7 or so. My son is 7 and mm-hmm. he just loves them. It's the founder, Chris Ballew, who was the founder of the Presidents of the United States of America. He now has this, kids music that he does. And it's, you know, it's just like, Lump or Peaches or one of those great president songs, but really done for kids, and great harmonies and fun little instruments, bongos and little picky little guitars. Some of them rock out, and they are so catchy they will get caught in your head for weeks, but your kids will be bopping around, and it really is fun for the whole family.
Yeah, definitely. And like that song, My Flea Has Dogs, that was really catchy, and a fun video with it too.
Yep.
Speaking of unusual instruments, I posted about this album that just came out called Songs for Unusual Creatures. That a guy named Michael Hurst released just a couple of days ago. It was a Kickstarter project to go in conjunction with his book that's called Unusual Creatures, that's coming out as a Chronicle book in October. But he is a great musician, and he made a song for each of the animals that he writes about in the book. So he has one, a song about the humpback anglerfish, a song about the Jesus Christ lizard, a song about the elephant shrew, one about the glass frog. The introduction is a song called The March of the Unusual Creatures. And so he uses like a glass harmonica, a very tiny Japanese transistor synthesizer from the 70s, a theremin. But he's an excellent musician, so they're arranged really well, and it's not like a joke. The music is really interesting and eclectic. And so it's available as a you can listen to it on SoundCloud, or you can buy it, I think, very inexpensively. I'll have a link in the show notes to it. So that's called Songs for Unusual Creatures by Michael Hurst. And so we've got just about 5 minutes left. I thought we could talk about a couple of websites. Ruben, you have started something called the Inner Hive, which I think other cartoonists and independent creators are looking to as this model of maybe a way to survive in the 21st century. And it's working for you. So talk a little bit about what the Inner Hive is and how it's going for you.
Yeah, well, Mark, thanks so much for bringing it up. It's been great. I've only been doing it for like 4 weeks now. And it's taken off, and I've been so happy that other people have started it and have credited me with giving them the idea. Basically, it came from the fact that, you know, comic strip artists, we've seen the collapse of newspapers, and that was a great source of revenue. That was our home for about 100 years. But the rise of the internet, and so, you know, it's very complicated. But basically, you know, I felt as though I'm more well read and more famous, although I'm not involved to those celebrity meetings. I'm more famous than I'd ever been.
You're welcome. Internet famous. You're welcome. You can come anytime.
Sure.
You've been on a podcast with me.
That's the entry key.
I'm just out the door. It's internet famous, but I'm much more well read than I'd ever been. But I'm making less money because I've lost, and everyone in the industry has lost so many newspaper clients. So I came up with this idea and started it like 4 weeks ago, where I'd sort of have a more direct relationship with fans, they can sign up for a subscription service where I'll send the comic strip at least a day before it's available publicly, with some extra commentary, And, you know, it goes right to your inbox, only once a week. And, you know, it's sort of cool because people, it's been amazing because so many people have offered to help. So many readers have signed up. And, each time I get a new subscriber, it's like, it's just such a warm feeling. And it's, you know, financially, it's making a big difference. So, I'm really going to start, you know, paying attention to how to it and how to make it grow and make it really part of the sustainability of Tom the Dancing Bug. It's succeeded enough that it's, right now it's my single, biggest revenue source, in 4 weeks with just making an announcement. It really has been great. And it really is thanks to the, you know, people like you, Mark, and Boing Boing and so many other people who have tweeted about it. And, John Hodgman wrote a wonderful essay about it, about how this is a new model of patronage of the things that you like in arts, paying directly instead of through, you know, networks. So I'm just really thankful. And anybody, you know, listening who wants to sign up, it's at tomthedancingbug.com. There's a link there to sign up. And it's just $9.99 for 6 months, and you help sustain the comic strip and get some cool stuff.
That's so cool. And, you know, Ruben, I love the stories that you write about kind of the story behind the comic strip each time. And I had suggested to you that you should have a message board attached to each one. But I think actually one great thing about it is that it's like a weekly contained experience that's like a 5-minute little slice of time you can take out of your day to enjoy something. And if you added conversations, people might start thinking, oh, you know, in order to get my full value out of this, I should participate. It's better to just have it the way you've nailed it on the first try. I would just keep it like it is.
That's great. You know, Mark, like I told you, you're the guru on this. You've had the success on the internet. So I'm gonna listen to your every word.
Well, I don't know if you should listen to me, but that's my opinion.
that's great.
Thanks, Ruben. So it's called The Inner Hive, and it's $10 for 6 months, right?
That's right.
Weekly things. That's a great deal. And so, Rain, you alerted me to something that I had never heard of before that sounds really cool. Chess.com, where you can play chess with people online.
Wait, you'd never heard of chess.com?
No.
Oh, you silly geek. Can you see me on my camera, by the way?
No, we're just doing audio.
I see me on my camera. I look astonishingly handsome. I am, it's boring. I know, it's boring. Chess.com. But this is like, I recently discovered it. I had been playing chess on Yahoo and some other chess sites. And this is like the ultimate chess lover's site. There's videos and lessons and tactics training. And you can watch grandmasters play. And I was on the chess team when I was in high school. And I really love playing chess. I have like 7 or 8 games going right now. And then sometimes I'll go on and play speed chess as well.
Wow.
Blitz, they call it blitz chess.
Do people know that they're playing against you, or do you have a pseudonym?
I have a pseudonym. No one knows who I am. They think that I'm just another loser spending hours on a chess website.
But if you told them who you were playing, you could throw off their game and win against them pretty easily, probably.
Yeah. No, they'd want to beat me so they could say they beat Dwight from the office.
That's true. Well, you guys, we have actually run out of time. This was the time just flew by. I want to thank you guys for joining me on this episode of Gweek. Ruben, you can find your stuff at tomthedancingbug.com. And Michael, you are at cruftbox.com. And Rain is soulpancake.com and the new YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/soulpancake.
That's it. Check it out. Watch our videos there.
Sounds good. Well, thanks a lot, you guys. I really appreciate it. This was fun.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Boing Boing and Gweek, and nice talking to you guys. This was really fun. Thanks.
You too, Rain. It was great.
Thanks, Rain. Great to meet you online.
Okay.
Bye. Bye.
That wraps up another episode of Gweek. To listen to past episodes of Gweek, visit gweek.net. That's spelled G-W-E-E-K.net. Also, if you like the show, please rate and review it at the iTunes Store. See you next week.